You are listening to episode 32 of the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. I've had requests for sharing my birth stories. Now I've shared at least three of them over on my YouTube channel. I'm trying to think of whose I didn't share. I guess I didn't share the two girls. I've shared since I've been a blogger. I've shared Eli's van birth story just because that was really interesting. And then when I had Daniel, I made a video and shared it. And then I shared when I had Micah because I was a blogger slash vlogger then as well. So it was natural to come on, introduce my baby and share the birth story. But I never have shared the kids before that. I think I shared Jude's, which was another home birth, on my blog, but not on my YouTube channel. And then the girls, they are 9 and 11 currently. I don't believe I've ever shared that in any form. Now, of course, it's very much in my brain. Births are very unforgettable. Most details are there. And so I remember them, but I never did put them down on pen and paper or in a video style format. My name is Lisa, mom of six and creator of the blog and YouTube channel Farmhouse on Boone. Join me as I share with you my love for creating a handmade home from scratch cooking and a little mom and entrepreneur life along the way. I'm going to try my absolute best in this to not say anything controversial. I'm the worst about that because I do have opinions about things, but I try to stay really politically correct and medically correct, if that's the right word for this, because I hate ruffling feathers. I don't know what Enneagram that makes me or Myers-Briggs, but when people send me hateful emails about things, I melt. I hate that kind of thing. I don't want anybody to find me to be a person that would want to argue or share anything that's going to make you upset. That is one of my biggest fears. So that is why I have such a hard time sharing anything juicy, because I know that the moment I share something even remotely controversial, I'm going to get emails and messages, and I hate that. I mean, I get messages on paint color and so many ridiculous, stupid things that are hateful and mean. So I can't imagine if I actually shared something controversial like my choice to have home births. I mean, whenever I announced my pregnancy with Daniel, I got legit hate emails about overpopulating the world when I was in my first trimester of pregnancy. So anyways, I know none of you are going to do that. Come on, you're not. But nonetheless, I find this topic scary and quite uncomfortable, and you can tell. But I'm going to share it anyway, because my first birth experience was in the hospital, and it wasn't the best, and it could have been avoided if I had done a little bit of research on birth. Now, interestingly enough, I did do a podcast interview recently with the Down to Birth podcast, and I was able to get a little bit more confrontational over there. Not confrontational, it's not the right word, but express a little bit more of my opinions, mostly because I wasn't worried about anybody emailing me. I just don't want to deal with it. It's the same reason why I set my raw milk video on YouTube to private. It was my most disliked video, which still I think the like percentage was not even that bad, but it was by far the most disliked video. It's something that we've been doing for 10 years at this point of drinking raw milk. And I am 100% confident in my decision. It's done nothing but good things for our health. And I set that video to private because I got scared of all the trolls who told me that basically it was the worst decision ever and we're going to die. Anyways, that is where I'm coming from. So let's dive into it. My first daughter, Ruthie, this could get long. She was born almost 12 years ago. No, 11 and a half years ago at this point. I was just 23. I'd turned 23 the month after, the month before I had her. I was very naive to anything pertaining to having babies. I hadn't done any research. I hadn't developed an interest in wellness or anything healthy cooking at this point. And so it didn't occur to me to read anything. I didn't have any thoughts about whether or not I would have an epidural. It wasn't something I honestly thought about. I just was pregnant and I knew that when I went to the hospital, the baby would come out. And that sounds really naive, and honestly it is, and that is not how you should go into birth at all. But that is what I did. I went there. I didn't even know that it is pretty much protocol to, at least at the time. See, things might have changed. I haven't had a hospital birth in over 9 years. So maybe things are way better now. And let's just give it the benefit of the doubt. And you can all tell me that it's changed and it's so much better. But at the time, it is protocol to break your water at a certain stage of the game. It's protocol to give Pitocin at a certain stage, and it is protocol to do an epidural. And I couldn't have even told you up until this point what Pitocin was. That is how little I knew about it. So on my due date, I was still pregnant. She was due on our anniversary, December 15th. At this time too, I did not know that people could go past their due date. That sounds so stupid now to me. But at the time, I fully assumed she'd be born before that. I didn't think that you could go past your due date. And now I know, because of midwife studies, that the real length of pregnancy is actually 41 weeks. It is not 40. If they study the average pregnancy and it's 41, and interestingly enough, that is exactly 9 months, because when you're 41 weeks pregnant, it's counted from the date of your last period. So you're really 39 weeks pregnant. And if you put it into your calculator, 39 weeks is 9 months. So it's weird, in my opinion, that we say pregnancy is 40 weeks when, if you let it go without inductions, the average would fall around 41. This was nothing. I knew nothing about this at the time. I have a weird pet peeve. And if you are my sister or one of my good friends, you're about to roll your eyes, but I have a really weird pet peeve when people say that pregnancy is 10 months. They say, well, you're pregnant 40 weeks and 40 divided by 4 is 10. Yes, except for that months have 28 days. So anyways, pregnancy is actually, if it's 40 weeks, you're pregnant 38 weeks. That is actually 1 week less than 9 months. So it's not even a full nine if we're counting at 40. Okay, so way off topic, but I went into labor the day after my due date when I was 40 weeks and 1 day pregnant. Now, to me, that almost sounds early. I cannot believe I went into labor that early. I started having contractions every, I believe it was 10 minutes, and they were in the middle of the night, probably somewhere around midnight. So I want to say that this was like midnight-ish on the 16th of December. And I got up and I had a what to expect when you're expecting book. Yeah, that was the extent of my pregnancy library. And I was reading on there what contractions felt like. I did not have Google at the time because we didn't have internet in our house. And they described it as a wave starting in the back and radiating to the front. And that was exactly what I was experiencing. I started timing them. They were every 10 minutes apart, but they never got really any closer. So I knew that we could hang tight. So in the morning, Luke went to work. He has to be there at 7. And I just kept having contractions all day. When he got home at lunch, they hadn't picked up a lot, but I believe they were maybe like 6 or 7 minutes apart. And I told him I really didn't want him to go back to work because we should probably go. Looking back, if I had known the signposts that they talk about in the Bradley Childbirth Method book, which I love, I would have known that it wasn't really time to go yet, but I didn't. And I was really worried about not making it. And this is my first baby. I don't know what to expect. So we get there and they check me and I'm a 4, which the day before, I think it was the day before, maybe 2 days before, it was really recent around my due date, they checked me and I was 0. And so they told me, you know, you're not going to go into labor. You are nothing. But I went into labor and I got to a 4. So I know I was in labor because I had been 0 the day before. It wasn't like I was walking around a 4. The contractions were what got me to the 4. So they brought me in and then they hooked me up to Pitocin. I had no clue, you know, why they would do that because I was already in labor, but it didn't matter to me at the time. Around 6, I believe, they broke my water to speed it up even more. Now, granted, we hadn't been there very long because the whole, I probably got there around 3 in the afternoon and I had her around 10 p.m. So the whole process definitely wasn't long, but we were right away speeding it up. Well, around, I believe it was maybe a 7, I got the epidural. I don't remember. I did not have significant pain. I wasn't begging and screaming for it or anything like that, but it was just time to get the epidural. They were like, do you want the epidural? And I said, yes, I'll have the epidural. Yes, that is the next step. And so they gave me the epidural and then the chaos started. The thing about this birth story is I feel like I've heard it 100 times, like the same one, where the mom ends up having Pitocin, the water broke, the epidural, and then suddenly the heart rate starts dropping and things start going crazy, and then there's a C-section. So that is almost what happened. We didn't have a C-section, but her heart rate started dropping down to in the, I believe it was the 20s, not the 120s. I really think I'm remembering that right. It was very, very low, scary low. They made me turn on my side because they said that if I turned on my side, her heart rate was keeping up better whenever I was on my side. And so that made all the epidural pool on one side, and I was experiencing all the same labor pain without the epidural. And I wasn't prepared for that because I had not prepared for my labor. And so I did not know how to cope with that amount of pain. And so I was all hooked up to all these monitors and these IVs, and now I'm experiencing legit labor pain. And so I started panicking and I started getting really freaked out. I did not know that this is how a lot of hospital births go. So I thought, like, I'm the one whose baby is going to actually die here. I didn't know that. I had never heard a birth story. I didn't know anything about it. So to me, this was like an exception. This was really bad. And she was going to die. They put an oxygen mask on me because I started getting white. I was freaking out. My mom was freaking out. Everybody in the room just looked frazzled. So around, it wasn't long after, I was saying lots of prayers. I got all the way to a 10, and we decided that I wouldn't have to go in for a C-section. They were talking about it. They were like, okay, this can't go on much longer. And I was signing the papers for the C-section, and then he checked me and he was like, you know what, you're a 10. So they did a big old episiotomy and they pulled her out with forceps. She had a massive cone head. I couldn't sit down for 2 or 3 weeks because of all the stitches. I mean, it was very painful. It was after recovering from all of that that I started to wonder if that's how it had to go. Now, I didn't do any more research just yet, but once I got pregnant with baby number two, she came along, I believe Ruthie was around 14 months when I got pregnant with her because they're 23 months apart. I was still nursing at the time, but whenever Johanna became a thing, I started getting into researching this birth thing. I knew that, well, I didn't know, but I figured or I wondered or suspected that it didn't have to be the way that it was with Ruthie, because I've heard women, there was a particular woman at my church at the time. She had 12 kids. She had them all at home, and she claimed that she liked birth. I am still not at that point personally, but it intrigued me. What about the experience that you had made you say that you actually like it? So I talked to her and I asked her to sit down with me and actually explain to me what she was talking about and why. And she did. We met up and she introduced me to the book, it's called Natural Childbirth, The Bradley Way by Susan McCutcheon. And I have it linked in my Amazon shop. If you want to support Farmhouse Hubby, if you're going to buy this book, go to amazon.com/shop/farmhouse on Boone. I have all of the books I own in a books category on there on my shop, and you can click on that because, you know, I referred you to it. That book was a game changer and I took it really seriously. So she said, you have to get this book and you have to actually do all of the practice in it. You can't just get the book, read it, and be like, yeah, I'm good. There are exercises in it where you practice relaxation. You put yourself into this deep relaxation mode where from your head all the way down to your toes, you're conscious of each muscle and you release the tension. And that sounds really, I don't know what the word is for it, hippie, woo-woo, whatever people call it. And I am so not like that, but I promise you it works. Or at least, you know, at the time when I was pregnant with Johanna, I didn't know if it was going to work yet, but I believed her and I tried it. And I can tell you now on the other side of it, times 5, that it totally works. So I was set that with Johanna, I was going to have a non-epidural birth and I was going to do it the Bradley way. Still at the time, our insurance wasn't going to cover a home birth or a birthing center birth. And I didn't want to incur the extra expense of having a home birth because at the time the budget was really tight. I didn't want to spend any extra money on having a home birth. And now I still would, I think, I mean, it's hard to say if I could convince myself to spend the extra money, but a midwife-led birth is going to be more likely to result in a natural birth. But It did work out for me. So here's what happened. I practiced the book my whole pregnancy, and we ended up having a scare of her having IUGR, which is intrauterine growth restriction. She measured really small, so my uterus never seemed to grow. And around 38 weeks, I came in for a prenatal ultrasound, or not ultrasound, but a non-stress test, and they decided to send me straight over to the hospital in St. Louis for an induction. I was very bummed because I thought that, you know, I was going to do this all natural. I had prepared. I drank red raspberry leaf tea by the gallon my entire pregnancy because I wanted to strengthen and tone my uterus to have this natural birth experience. So it was a quick blow to that whole plan because now I had to go get induced. Again, I don't know what a midwife would have done in this situation. We probably would have looked at my diet and protein and we would have taken less drastic measures, but that is just not the situation that I was in. And quite honestly, whenever your medical provider tells you that your baby's in danger, you're going to do what they say to do. And so I'm happy the way it all turned out on the other side of it, but I do wonder what would have happened if I'd had a more naturally minded person, because the person that I had is definitely not naturally minded. So anyways, I went to the hospital. They gave me the Cervidil, which is just, it's essentially like a pill they push up towards your cervix, and it helps to soften everything to prepare for the next day of Pitocin, which will induce the labor. In the Bradley method, the key is to not make a big stress and a big fuss about labor. It's to relax and not get tense. And so my way that I was planning to deal with that was to not really invite nurses in for constant checks and looking at the contractions. I wanted to avoid all of that. It actually worked out really in my favor because my body, when the Cervidil came in, instantly decided to go into labor. I mean, it pushed me into labor so fast. But the nurses, they hooked me up to the contraction monitor, they hooked me up to the heart rate thing, but they left and said, good night. We'll see you in the morning. We'll give you the Pitocin then. But I actually went into labor and they didn't come back in to check on me because they assumed that I was sleeping. And I started having these really strong contractions. I was doing my Bradley method. It wasn't ideal because I was all hooked up, but I was still able to fully relax myself and manage the contractions actually quite well. And I never sent Luke out to tell the nurses what was happening because I was in the zone and it was going really well. So around 5 a.m., this was, I think the Cervidil started at 9 a.m., around 9 p.m., but around 5 a.m., I sent Luke out to get them because I had to push. When he went out, he yelled, my wife has to push. They were like, you're not the lady in that room because she's sleeping with the Cervidil and we're going to induce her in the morning. And when they came in, it was like the house doctor. It was not my OBGYN because they had no clue I was in labor and I wasn't planning to tell them. I basically wanted to have like my little home birth at the hospital. Johanna was born really quickly. After that, they came in. The house doctor barely made it. She was sunny side up or posterior, which means that I did need some stitches, but nothing too bad. And it was a night and day different experience from Ruthie. Now, after Johanna, I decided that I wanted to venture out into the midwife-led birth. I liked the way hers had gone, but I also, you know, I didn't have any other interventions besides the Cervidil, no epidural, no water breaking, no antibiotics. It was all very non-medically managed, but I still wondered what was something I could have done to, you know, help with this IUGR. Maybe we should have looked at things throughout the pregnancy. I wanted a more holistic approach. Also, this is something I didn't think about at the time, but there's a reason why she was face up. Ruthie, I forgot to mention, was also face up, but then all of my midwife-led births were not. And I think that we address positioning with the midwives, and it was something we actually talked about. Whereas with the OBGYNs, I never had any clue that they were in a bad position. They never felt my uterus to decide, you know, which way the baby's head was facing. That was a constant discussion point with midwives with my other births. It was something that we were very focused on, And it was important all throughout the pregnancy to know what their position was, because it leads to an optimal birth. It's just a really important thing to discuss that was completely left out of the equation with the first two births. So with Eli, I contacted a birthing center in our area, and I had all of my prenatal visits with a midwife, fully planned to go into the birthing center. Now, if you've watched my YouTube video, you know what happened with him. At 41 weeks, I was still pregnant. And I was very surprised by that, because I had my first daughter just a day or two after her due date. And then the second daughter was induced at 38 weeks, but she came so fast and easily, I had myself convinced that she was going to come early anyway. But this time I had a true 41 week and one day pregnancy. My contractions started around 5 p.m. They were very sporadic and irregular. But around, I believe it was 10 p.m., and I could have my story a little bit off. You can go watch the YouTube video on this, or if you're on farmhouseonboone.com, if you search baby in the van, I have the whole story, and I actually wrote it closer to the time he was born, so the details are more accurate. But I decided to use the breast pump to induce labor. Or it was already going, but to encourage it to go faster. Now, I don't recommend that you do this unless you're under the care of a midwife, because it does carry some risks. It's not something you should just take into your own hands. But it made my contractions come, and it made them come very strong. Around 11 p.m., I called my midwife and told her that I was having contractions and I felt like the baby was coming soon. She listened to my voice and told me that she didn't think I sounded like to the point that I needed to come in. And I really should have trusted my instincts, because I had done a lot of reading and studying. I reread the Bradley Method book. I knew what I was doing. I'd already experienced one natural birth, but I decided that she was right and that I wasn't ready. Well, around 1 a.m., everything changed. Luke and I left the house, and I pretty much felt like I needed to push as we were leaving the house. We got to the next town over, and we were pulled over by a cop because Luke was going about 80 miles an hour. My water had broken. He looked in. He let us go, obviously. And Eli was born within 5 minutes from that. We were, at the time, driving about 70 miles an hour. I was in the back of the van when the baby was born. Everyone asked, why didn't Luke pull over? He asked me if I wanted him to pull over, and I didn't want him to pull over because I didn't know what we were going to do if something happened. I wanted him to just get there faster. But once the baby was born and he was crying, I just told Luke to slow down and go and just get us to the birthing center. The midwife met us out in the van and helped us in with towels and blankets, because the baby was born. Of course, he was still attached, and we just went into the birthing center. He nursed for quite a while before she delivered the placenta, cut the cord, and sent us back on our way. We were back home in our beds before the other kids woke up, the girls, and we had a baby in the van. So that experience led me into home birth. I decided that I didn't want to try to have a birth center birth anymore. I loved the experience of working with the midwife. I felt like she was very knowledgeable. We took issues along the way and we found natural ways to work them out. And that is what I like to do with medicine, is I like to try natural things, but then I love that modern medicine is available for when things go really wrong. I think that's awesome. I love that if things go drastically wrong, you can go to the hospital and there is modern medicine and modern intervention. I think that's wonderful. But I always like to address things more naturally first, and the midwife really helped me in that pursuit. Oh, and I also need to mention that I ended up measuring really small with Eli too, and he was 8 pounds and 7 ounces at birth. And the one who had IEGR before that, my daughter, she was 6 pounds, but she was only 38 weeks. So I think it's more that my body measures small. I think it's the way my torso is, rather than the baby's actually being small. But we were able to look at that. The midwife just used her hands to feel the size of the baby, and we decided that it was safe for him to continue in there. And he was born 8 pounds, 7 ounces at 41 weeks. That continued to be a pattern. All my other kids measured small as well, and they all were really good size. So I don't think that, I suspect that I didn't actually have IUGR with Johanna, but I'll never know that for sure. Baby number 4, he was born at 41 weeks and 2 days. I used the breast pump again under the supervision of my midwife. So with him, I had group B strep tested positive. With the subsequent two babies after him, I ended up saying no to the antibiotics. But with Jude, I was uncomfortable at that point doing that. So the way that we managed that is I had the midwife come to the house and give me one bag of the IV antibiotics. And then I was given instructions to use my breast pump because it had worked so well with the baby before. And she was going to go to a coffee shop and basically wait for the labor to begin. And I should also point out with Jude that I was having contractions before I had her come over and do that bag of IV antibiotics. But it just, they weren't really going anywhere. But we both decided and hoped that a quick breast pump would make me go into full-blown labor, and that's exactly what happened. So she went, got some coffee, I got out the breast pump, and I called her back over within an hour. My water had broken, and then he was born within another hour. So it went really well. I don't even have much to report on that one. He was 8 pounds and 10 ounces. I didn't need any stitches. His head was the biggest of all my babies, but he was properly positioned. And so everything just went really well. That birth was fairly easy. I mean, all of my natural births from Johanna, basically all five of them, they followed the same pattern where I'm able to relax through all of the contractions. Everything's very manageable. Transition is really difficult. And then the pushing phase is always pretty relieving. I mean, it has parts of it that aren't very ideal, but it's mostly a relief to be done with the contractions. Micah's story went similarly to the other two boys. He actually came a day or I went into labor a day after my due date. So he was due on December 3rd. I went into labor on December 4th-ish. And he was born, let me think about this. I don't remember. Gosh, this is all running together now. Oh, I remember now. Okay, sorry. I went into labor 2 days after my due date. He was born on December 5th. I remember I went into labor around noon. I was making some videos I went into labor the night before. I started having contractions the night before on December 4th. And then when I woke up, they kind of slowed down and I was having them about every 20 minutes apart. And then around noonish, they started picking back up. I made a video for my YouTube channel, which is actually really fun that I have that video now, because whenever I watch it, I know that Micah was born within an hour or two after that. So if you're curious, it was the video where I was making cinnamon applesauce ornaments. It was a Christmas video, but I was having contractions during that video. I edited those out, of course, but between contractions, I was able to stay very calm and nothing was too painful or anything like that. Around 3:30 in the afternoon, Luke got home from work and my mother-in-law used to come over once a week for us to go on a coffee date. And when she got there, prior to her coming there, I was still planning on going on the coffee date. But then when she actually got there, everything changed. And I told her that I did not think we'd be going on the coffee date anymore because it was very clear at this point that I was in labor. Up until then, I was thinking, well, nothing's too strong. Maybe it'll stop and start again. But by about 3:30 in the afternoon, it was very obvious that I was going to be having a baby. So I called my midwife and told her nothing urgent, but I do know that this is happening. This is the same midwife that I'd had for Eli and for Jude. And she showed up, I can't remember my times exactly, but she showed up about 30 minutes, I believe, before I had him. It was around 7 p.m. So about 3 and a half hours after I knew that things were really serious, he was born. Again, he was 8 pounds, 11 ounces. So just my biggest baby, but just an ounce bigger than his brother before him. He was head down face down in the right position. I didn't need any stitches. He came out very easily. If you want more details on this birth story, it is on my YouTube channel, but it went pretty much just like Jude's. Now, Daniel, he is my sixth baby. I just had him in October, so about 5 months ago. He was a little bit different, actually. He, just like Micah and like Ruthie, was born 2 days after his due date, so that is a pattern for me now. I've had half of my kids exactly 2 days after the due date. I went into labor on October 16th. He was due the 17th, or he was due the 15th. And I started having contractions overnight every, I think, about 10 minutes. And when I woke up in the morning, I was sure that that was going to be baby day on the 16th. I told Luke that we're going to have the baby today. All day long, I walked around with those contractions 10 minutes apart, and they never got any closer. By about the nighttime, I was starting to get really frustrated because the whole night before, I'd had contractions overnight and they'd kept me awake. And so I did something that is called the mile circuit. It was recommended by my midwife. It's a certain, it's like a exercise sort of position type thing. You do each, there's three different circuits. You do each one for, I think it's 30 minutes. It's already fuzzy how exactly it went. But if you find yourself in labor and you cannot get the baby to, or the labor to progress, this is what you need to do. It was immensely helpful. So the night of the 16th, I ended up still having contractions all night, and I decided that if it still wasn't picking up, I was going to contact the midwife and have her come over, and we were going to do something. Either we were going to break my water, or we were going to do the breast pump, something, because I didn't want to do a third night of no sleep. I'd already done 2 nights of no sleep. Now, up to this point, so all during my pregnancy, she told me that the baby wasn't in the best position. I think he was facing my left hip most of the pregnancy. She would just palpate on my uterus and feel where he was, and she told me that his positioning wasn't ideal. I carried that into labor, and we now think that that is the reason I wasn't progressing, because his head wasn't engaging. That would cause my cervix to open more quickly and to get things progressing. So I gave her till 6 a.m. I decided that I was just going to labor all night and I wouldn't call her until 6 a.m. But once 6 a.m. came, I was going to have her come over here and figure something out, because I'd been in labor pretty much for 48 hours every 10 minutes. And it wasn't that any of it was extremely excruciating. It was just annoying because I was having these regular contractions and nothing was seeming to happen. All my other kids, once I was having these regular contractions, I was having the baby. And so I didn't know what was going on, why I was having this, I believe it's called prodromal labor. After doing some research now and having this experience, I feel like prodromal labor probably often has to do with a poor positioning. And I'm so thankful for a midwife in this situation, because I don't know how long it would have gone for. Once she came over around 7 a.m. on the 17th, she put me in another position that was designed to engage the baby's head and get the baby in the proper position. And I seriously had him within an hour of her trying that. So she put me into this position. I had to labor in it. It was very uncomfortable. It wasn't my favorite thing, but it did get him in the proper position, and he was born so quickly. Now, when she first got there, I was a six. All my other birth center midwife-led births, we never checked my dilation. So I only had my dilation checked with Ruthie, of course, because I just went along with everything. And then with Daniel, but only during labor, never during pregnancy. But she decided that since I'd been in labor for 48 hours, she just wanted to assess the situation. I was totally fine with it, and I was a six. So we knew that I was in labor, but it was a little bit discouraging that I'd been in labor for 48 hours and I was only a six. But again, I had him 30 minutes after that, after doing the positioning techniques that she told me. So I went from a six to a 10 really quickly. I had him in two pushes. He came out perfectly, no stitches, head down. All of that had worked wonders. So of course, I'm bent towards midwife care. I've had six births, and the ones that were managed in a more natural way just went so well and didn't have any of these scary moments. They were peaceful, and I knew what I was doing. The biggest key is for a mother to go in informed about the situation, not to just put all of your care and trust, or to put your own care and all of your trust into someone else, but to advocate for yourself and to educate yourself, understand the process, understand how it all works, understand how you can take care of yourself nutritionally, and how you can prepare your body and your mind for birth. That made so much more of a difference to me. And I think that is the culture of a midwife-led birth. They're very good at giving moms the confidence to do that kind of thing, to study and read and take more personal responsibility. That's just the culture of natural birth. And I think that's what I appreciate so much about it. And it makes sense to have moms involved in the process and not just turn yourself over like, yeah, do whatever to me, get this baby out. But when you get educated and you take responsibility for it, that's where I found the biggest difference was in my birthing stories. I also want to point out, I forgot to mention this, but in Ruthie's situation, she came out with what is called a true knot in her cord. And that is where literally it's just like it sounds. She swam through her cord at some point during the pregnancy and made it to where when she was coming out, it was in a complete knot. And it's actually a rare occurrence. I did some Googling on it. So knotted umbilical cords or true knots occur roughly one in every 2,000 deliveries. That is what they told me was the cause for her dipping heart rate and all of the chaos in the birth. And again, everything went well. I have a healthy daughter. And so I am not saying that I thought that experience was terrible. I am happy it all turned out exactly how it did because I had a healthy baby. I had a vaginal birth, but I am the lucky weird one. Somehow it happened to me again. And my first home birth, my son Jude, he was born with a true knot. And whenever the midwife told me that he had a true knot, I was actually really skeptical that it was a rare thing because I'm like, well, it can't be that rare. It happened to me twice. And she said, no, truly, I never see this. It's very rare. And she was monitoring his heart rate. And she said that she could tell there were some decelerations during pushes and during contractions because that is what happens with true knots. And she monitored the situation closely, but she was never panicked. I was never panicked. And he was born without any problems whatsoever. He was pink. We don't really do Apgar scores at home births, but he probably would have passed with flying colors because he was perfect. So that is another scenario where I could have had a lot of fear about that. My midwife with Jude, what I like about her is she doesn't just throw all risks and cautions to the wind like, well, but we're home birth midwives. And so, you know, it'll all go perfectly fine no matter what. Definitely not. And that is not how my other midwife was that I had with Daniel either. They assess each risk. If you need medical intervention, they're the first ones to take you to the hospital. As we all know, the goal of a birth is healthy mom and healthy baby. But do a little bit of research if you're pregnant, if this is interesting to you, if you're going to have any more babies, into gut bacteria and vaginal births and why it is actually really important that babies are born vaginally. Now, I do believe that C-sections are life-saving. I'm glad they exist. If any of my children were in one of the rare people or kids that actually need a C-section, I would have been the first one to sign up. So happy they exist. But they are overused. And there is lots of research on gut bacteria, gut biome, and vaginal birth. So just look into that if you're pregnant. More than anything else, what I want to encourage you to do, whether you are going to have a hospital birth, midwife birth, home birth, whatever, go in educated. Don't just assume that you don't need to be involved in the process because you do. You are the one having the baby here. You are very much an integral part of the process. It's important to go into it with some knowledge. All right, well, I know this one got long, so I won't answer one of my random Instagram questions today. I'm thankful for all of my births. They all have taught me something, and they all brought me a precious little one, and they're all great experiences in their own ways. All right, well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. You can check out all of my birthing stories in depth if you're interested. Probably if you're pregnant, that'll be really interesting to you. If not, maybe it's just a little bit entertaining to hear them all recounted. I'll leave those down in the show notes, and I'll see you in episode 33 of the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast.